Sump City Radio and Necromunda podcast is best listened to with headphones for maximum quality and effect. The show may contain profanity and mature content, not suitable for Jews under the age of 14. Listener discretion is advised.
Sump City Radio.
Hello, listeners, you funky mother scummers. Did you like that intro? A bit OTT, perhaps? Oh, well, anyway, we are back, albeit very briefly, as this is a special episode to coincide with the pre-order of the new Necromunda book entitled Necromunda Apocrypha, which we will be reviewing for you. It will also be available to pre-order now from the Warhammer website. But don't worry, a full episode of the proportions that you have grown to expect from us is on the way and should be dropping Christmas Eve, so keep an eye out for that. People will have seen the previews for this on Warhammer Community, including, I believe, the contents page of this very book.
Yeah, I'm actually pleasantly surprised at the positive response that the preview got, because, yeah, there was a little contents page that somebody had snapshotted and... I don't know if it was from... I'm assuming it was from the preview, because I don't know where else it would have come from.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's got people speculating quite wildly about what's in here. And after spending some time with the book, thank you, Games Workshop, for sending us a copy. It's always very much appreciated. I quite like it. And I know that doesn't sound massively effusive, but I wasn't really sure what it was at first. But then I think, if you're a Necromunda player... and you've just, say, started with Ash Wastes, or even later, like you've just picked up the core rule book, this is a really handy way of having a lot of information that we've seen before, but also some really cool new information kind of inserted as well.
Yeah.
Say, like, those White Dwarf articles are out of print, you can't get hold of them anymore, and sure, you could, you know, skirt around the darker recesses of the web and probably find copies, but to have it in a nice kind of official book is really cool, with the resurrection packages and the brutes, the kind of outlaw brutes. But also, it's the inclusion of the Uprising campaign, which I think it's really nice to have it in a book that's accessible to everyone. They didn't have to kind of pump out the 125 quid for the Dark Uprising
yeah, box,
which
set.
Is also currently out of print.
Absolutely, because previously it's only been locked behind that box set or people buying it off of eBay.
Exactly. So a nice official and easy way of getting hold of that is always welcome. For an arbitrator, I think, as well, on people who really love their campaigns, there's some really nice little bits in here, which we can discuss, of course. And then a little Dalak kind of shoved in at the end there as well, but we will have a talk about that later.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, so what were your initial thoughts on the book, Steve?
Yeah, I have to say I very much agree with your thoughts on this as well. It's nice to see everything, all these little articles being collected into one place. For example, this includes the gang raid scenarios that previously only came with a White Dwarf issue. And I don't know about anyone else, but this little booklet has seen so much time on the tabletop in my campaigns and at SumpCon that it's getting a little bit tatty around the edges now. So it's very well loved. So having it actually inserted into a proper full bound, you know, tome of Necromunda is actually really nice to see. It's also things, as you said, like the Outlaw Brutes, not having to flick through to PDFs or, you know, trying to find where that issue of White Dwarf has disappeared to so that I can look up details for Scrap Code Ambots or Warp Horrors and things like that. It's just really useful having it all put into one place. But then, of course, you've got the additional content, which I suppose is the things that we should really be discussing here.
Oh, absolutely. But a quick shout out to the fact that the actually pulled stuff from the original Gang War books as well.
Yeah, oh, yeah, of course, because we've got the Prison Break and Monster Hunt scenarios.
Yeah, which nobody's going to want to go and hunt those books down, because everything else in them is so kind of outdated. But it's, to bring them forward. So if you're a new player, I think it's quite an insta-buy. Maybe for your older players or your obsessive collectors, you've probably got a lot of this, and therefore like the newer stuff might seem a little like, oh, is it worth it? Well, that's going to be down to you, because obviously worth's so subjective. But no, I think I'm overall really kind of pleased with it. But
absolutely.
New stuff. Right, so I think the first thing people are going to want to hear about is the Underhive Nemesis system.
Yes.
So what we've got here is it's an arbitrator controlled mechanic slash fighter in the form of a nemesis for a campaign specifically. So your arbitrator can create a nemesis, the character, the backstory, the stats, and it's got like tools in there in order to create these things. And these have effects in game, even when they aren't on the board, like they affect the course of the campaign, but you can also pull them in and represent them with, and it says here, it's like they've officially made every model's a Necromunda model part of the Necromunda canon.
It is, isn't it?
It's like, it's saying, like, use, yeah, assassins, use tech priests, use this, use that. And what surprised me is, because they've got, like, archetypes and templates, and they're saying, like, if you're just starting out with this system, use these, and there's some really cool stat lines in there for these guys. But also, it's so, like, free and loose. It's like, if you want a monster with, like, 5 wounds, then go for it. You know, there's no limit to what you can do with this. So although they've provided you with, like, several archetypes and follow-on rules from that, they also kind of just say, just go with it. Just, like, let your players kind of, the more advanced your players are, maybe you want to pick something really horrific. Maybe you just want it to be kind of something low level. Maybe it's a hands-on combat monster. Maybe it's more of a behind-the-scenes manipulating Machiavellian-style enemy. So, yeah, do you want to quickly talk about the archetypes and then...
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, just broadly, what I'd like to say about this is that this feels very much like the kind of ideas that people would just naturally have throughout the course of a campaign if they're trying to be a good arbitrator, where they go, oh, well, I'll create this guy who has a problem with one of the gangs because they're getting a bit overpowered, and so I'll put him into the narrative and he can turn up as a character on the board and I'll create these stats for him. But when you go down those routes, it's always nice to be inventive and do those things, but sometimes you don't know whether you're being a bit OP with things or whether you're not being powerful enough. So this is like having the official version of that. So it might still be overpowered or underpowered, but my point is that you've literally got it official, so you can just go, aha, here's the book, here's all the bits from it, boom, there it is, it's done. And it's just nice to have this presented for people to go to.
Yeah, because I think some arbitrators, especially inexperienced ones, or people who just, you know, maybe they don't kind of have the level of creativity that others do. Mm. And it's just a nice kind of, yeah, pick
it's
and mix
system. It gives people permission, that's the thing.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, is it's not, oh, this is a, this isn't a house rule or a fan build.
Exactly.
It's like, yeah, no, this is
rules warriors back off. Exactly. And speaking of warrior.
Hey, good segue.
Hey.
Right, so, okay, so we've got 3... basic archetypes to start with. So the way they describe creating the nemesis for a campaign is similar to creating a hired gun or a bounty hunter. So where you could use that system to create like unique characters, the arbitrator gets to create the nemesis using specific archetypes that are put down here. And that'll dictate the stat line and the available skills.
And they give like 3 examples for different stat lines for each one of these archetypes.
Exactly, yeah. But they do say, obviously, play around with that as much as you want. But here's a nice kind of, hopefully more balanced. And I know that word gets kind of used very loosely in reference yes. to Necromunda. But yeah, it's there. You can pick and mix. You can literally go, right, we're going. So the 3 archetypes are Warrior, Schemer, and Overlord. So we don't often read blurb, but I think to give people an idea of what we've got.
Oh, yeah,
fast start, and then you go. So Warriors are generally tough, strong, and skilled in the use of weapons. They place great value on strength and prowess, and tend to deal with their enemies head on. The ex-gang boss turned Underhive warlord, the outland wanderer who sells their blade to the highest bidder, or the Uphive assassin trained from birth for murder are all examples of warrior Underhive nemesis. And you've got 3 stat lines there. So essentially you're paying off, you're trading off different stats for others, like you would with any character, with any gang. So the first
movement 7.
Yeah. that's a fast. So we're thinking that's probably an assassin build, I would imagine, because they're not as tough as the other stat lines. The strength isn't maybe as impressive. Less wounds, but they have a decent, like, two attacks. But yeah, it's that nice balanced 3+ weapon skill and ballistic skill across the board. So, like, it's slightly better than average.
2+ initiative, sounding very Escher.
Yes. And then you've got the 5+ movement, so not quite as fast, but a slightly better weapon skill, but ballistic skill 3, strength 4, toughness 4, 3 wounds, nice and meaty, 3+ initiative, and 3 attacks. So kind of more of a middle of the road. And then with the more ballistic skill based, so with the 2+ ballistic skill, so possibly an X-Lancer, you are suffering with the movement and you're -1 in weapon skill, but still 3+, which is again above average. Strength 4, toughness 4, so definitely not a fucking Vansar. 4 wounds. Can we just take a moment to appreciate that?
4 wounds, oh my lord.
It does suffer with 1 less attack, so only 2 attacks, but only 2 attacks. Do you know what I mean?
It's like Orlok Leader Plus.
And they get, their skill access is brawn, combat, ferocity, and shooting as their primary skill set. So you can really make some like cool characters. You've got lots to pick from there. Do you want to read the next one out, Bert?
Yeah. And then you've got the Schemer, and it says, Schemers are masters of manipulation and defeat their foes through guile and trickery. Schemers are often psychers or techno-savants, using the powers of the warp or dark technology to complete their goals. The debased heretic encased in the custom exo armor, the rogue weird corrupted by demonic powers, or the soulless spymaster pulling the strings of everyone around them are all examples of Schemer under Hive nemesis. So basically Dalak. All of these are going to be Dalak, no matter which way you cut it.
But it's like, immediately they're giving you those, like, just those little seeds of inspiration where you go, oh, actually, a corrupted weird, like a demonic corrupted weird, or, you know, like somebody in, like, plugged into exo armor, or,
And skill access for these guys is agility, cunning, leadership, and shooting as their primary skill sets. I'm assuming that because of the descriptions that they've given there, that just going, you know what, I'm going to give them access to psychic powers would fit quite well with this.
Absolutely, yeah. And then Overlord is the third archetype that they've got there. So Overlords are consummate leaders who command an army of underlings through fear, respect, or birthright. They're almost always surrounded by bodyguards and lesser underlings, who they enhance by their presence, and are more than willing to throw the lives of their followers away to get the job done. The Spire Noble turned Renegade, the Corrupted Enforcer Captain, or debased Chaos Cult Leader are all examples of Overlord Underhive nemesis. And then they've got the skill access of Cunning, Leadership, Shooting, Savant as their primary. So they've all got Shooting, which is obviously kind of rated as definitely one of the stronger ones.
Oh, yeah.
But then they can all back it up with, like, really build-specific skills available at primary as well.
Yeah, and there's a nice little note on here about gang specific skill sets as well.
Do you want to quickly go through that?
Sure. So where it says about these archetypes are presented using only the core skill sets from the Necromunda core rulebook. However, if the arbitrator wishes, it is entirely appropriate for an Underhive nemesis to also have access to the gang specific skill sets presented in other Necromunda supplements, such as the Necromunda House of Iron or Necromunda Book of Judgment, as suits their background. So it's again giving you the permission to go wild with using all of the different skill sets. I like how it doesn't use the savagery one from the corpse grinders in that list, though.
Yeah.
It's like, please don't create ad hoc corpse grinders.
Yeah, a 4-wound slaughtering.
Yeah. Just create the Eightfold Harvest Lord again.
Oh, God, no, don't. Let's not. Then it goes on to threat level. So once you've chosen the archetype, then you determine the threat level. So this is dictated by gang ratings. And then the threat level goes up accordingly in increments of 5. So when everyone in the campaign's gang rating is 0 to 999, your threat level, the nemesis threat level, is at 5. And that means the Underhive nemesis has access to 3 skills.
I like how they accommodate on this table that it goes up to 3,500 plus.
Yeah, exactly. I was just thinking that. I was like, how many players or how many games have you played? But yeah, the threat level goes up to 10, that's 4 skills. Up to 15 is 5 skills. Threat level 25 is up to 6 skills, and it goes all the way up to threat level 35 plus, which is the aforementioned 3,500 plus gang rating. 8
skills, bloody hell.
8 skills, yeah. And then you're going to want to arm these guys, and as you'd mentioned before, psychic abilities, so they're available there as well.
Oh, there we go, yeah, it mentions it officially, fantastic.
Again, this is dictated by your threat level, so when your threat level's at 0, they get 150 credits or less of weapons and war gear. Now, what's unique with the Underhive Nemesis is that you are creating an individual, but you can also create their lackeys, so you're going to want to kind of spend some of that money on hiring, like, say, an Ambot that follows them around, or an Ogryn, or whatever it is, or a couple of hangers-on to kind of be their kind of constant companions. You might just have them as a sole individual, but the ability is there to expand that into having them have minions follow them around and bodyguards. But that does come out of this budget. So at threat level 0, you're getting 150. At threat level plus 1, you're getting 200. Going up to, what's the total? 355 credits.
Yeah.
But bearing in mind, that doesn't include your fighter. That's just their weapons. Your nemesis just comes on its own. For every amount of money that you spend, that increases the threat level of the nemesis as well.
So these really had to be considered during the early stages, so you know exactly what threat level this guy is that you're planning to build.
Yeah. And again, with the psychic powers, with the weird powers there that are available. Although if you look at threat level plus 6, Underhive Nemesis has 6 or more weird powers.
Give them the list.
And as I said before, they can kind of hire minions included with their credit cost there. So if you want to create something a little more kind of stripped back but with support in tow, because remember, this is a way for the arbitrator to physically get involved in the game as well. If they aren't a player necessarily, then they can represent these things on the board and like throw them into the middle of battles whenever they choose, essentially.
Which I think is one of those things that for especially baby arbitrators, it's you want to play the games, you want to be involved, so you tend not to do the stepping back and just watching what's going on. So because you actually want to be involved directly, you're fresh to the game. So when you get this show up, it does kind of highlight what you've said there, which is that sometimes it's worth actually stepping back from a campaign so that you can monitor everything that's going on instead. But this then allows you those little opportunities to still have a bit of time playing on the table with, you know, everybody else in the campaign whilst you're, you know, doing all the arbitrating stuff in the background.
Yeah, I think it's like more of a kind of tactile way of arbitrating. It's like, and it's that instead of maybe fudging the scenarios in favour of somebody who's struggling or against somebody who you can actively kind of get involved and handle that like head on and in a fun and like practical way. Yeah, I think that's awesome. Do you want to talk about the next bit, the traits?
It then goes on to talk about developing personal traits for the nemesis as well. And essentially what it's saying in this paragraph, just to summarise, is that it's not necessarily about just picking all these little options from the table, but adding all of the flavour for your nemesis that you're creating as well. Coming up with the ideas for them first, maybe, and then sort of consulting the tables that you've got here to make that all match up, but within the game mechanics.
Yeah. And it's broken into 3 sections: motivations, connections, and weaknesses. So it makes them more of a rounded character. Now, you could choose these and pick these specifically to the character you've built, or you can use the randomized D6 tables in each of these as well, so that you're coming up with something completely unique that you weren't even really contemplating. It's just like, well, I've picked my archetype and now I'll pick these three things and we'll just see what happens. And it could be like something really interesting, something really monstrous maybe. But yeah, it's just, again, it's that kind of just keeping everything interesting.
You know what this kind of reminds me of? This reminds me of when you're building a character for a role play session of some system. You know, where it's got all of the options where you could literally sit there and, you know, come to the table with your own ideas and therefore tailor everything exactly to that. Or you could turn up last minute having forgotten everything and go, oh, I'm just going to roll some dice quickly. And right, there we go. That's what I'm selecting for this character that I'm going to be running today. So it accommodates for the whole spectrum of how you want to approach creating these things.
I think roleplay is the perfect way to describe this.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
With the motivations, so these don't have effects on the game, so to speak. Like, there's no mechanic in place. What it means is that when you play this character, that you follow these motivations. So you like, it's like making you think, well, I don't think this character would do that. I think that they would do this instead.
Yeah.
And in order to kind of give you those prompts, if we just go through, we'll take one at a time. So the first, Underhive Nemesis motivations, first one is kill them all. The Underhive Nemesis seeks death and carnage above all else and wants to see the Underhive littered with the corpses of everyone who stands in their way.
Yeah, we'll just pick a couple out of these because obviously this is just to give you an idea of the, mm-hmm. the flavor, listeners. And if you like the sound of this already, you're probably going to buy it anyway. But let's go for this one. Number four off the table, my rival must die. The Underhive Nemesis has a vendetta against a single individual. This could be one of the player's gang leaders or perhaps a local settlement leader or enforcer captain. Either way, their goal is to make their rival suffer and die. That sounds very Necromunda.
Very. And then you've got connections. And again, it's just that kind of... It's steering you in a way to kind of shape the character. So we'll pick one from random, Merchant's Guild. The Underhive Nemesis is aligned to or is part of the Merchant Guild, perhaps specifically one of the Great Mercators, and this will influence the kind of equipment and hired guns that they can call upon, as well as their areas of interest.
And I'll go with Noble Houses, which is on this table. So the Underhive Nemesis is either a noble or serves one of the Noble Houses and has the wealth and power that comes with it. Perhaps they have come from a noble house and this has given them powerful friends or access to certain equipment. So there's a whole spectrum of different ones on here, and what this feels like is this feels like all the different books that they've put out so far and the sort of the vibe of each one of those books,
yeah.
And condensed it down into a D6 table of like, well, these are the kind of different areas that you might get characters coming from.
Yeah, no, I think yeah, and okay, it's only three D6 tables, but the kind of variables between those are just going to be quite myriad, which is interesting. Yeah. And then, of course, that no good character comes without their flaws or weaknesses, and again, we get a D6 table for those. So
I'll save those character points to put into other areas of the character.
That's it, yeah. I am a moron, but I can shoot a bow from across the board, kind of.
Savant with a pinball table.
Yeah. An unforgiving master. The Underhive Nemesis serves a master who does not take kindly to failure. If the Underhive Nemesis fails in a key task or is perceived to have failed, then their master will take care of the Underhive Nemesis, saving the gangs the effort. So that's quite a strong built-in weakness.
Yeah,
I really like that.
I've got to go with this one, though. A lust for death. The Underhive Nemesis is a blood-crazed killer who cannot help but spill blood. Oh, this is so relatable. However, their frenzied nature can lead them into a trap, lure them away from their bodyguards, or pit them against a foe they cannot hope to defeat.
Yeah. And again, there's a little brown box there, black box, whatever. And that's just telling you can use... anything from across any of the systems that they do, like any of the 40k stuff.
To represent your model on the table.
Yeah. So...
I bet there's like two paragraphs of text in this box, and I bet what they wish they'd done is come up with Carl's hashtag of every model is a Necromunda.
That's
model. They could just save themselves so
it?
Much
yeah,
space.
It's not quite as catchy as that, is it? Let's
yeah.
be honest. You wouldn't hashtag this. But yeah, no, I think Carl's going to be really happy to see that because
it is
essentially that. And then it's got advice for kind of using the Nemesis within a campaign, and it's like saying maybe use them more at the beginning or at the end of a campaign, use them sparingly, and then how to actually kill or defeat the Underhive Nemesis. And then the second new mechanic that they've introduced, which goes along with the Underhive Nemesis thing, really, but can be run separately, is the Living Settings system.
The concept of this is just so, as with the Nemesis, really, it's just such a simple thing to describe to someone. This is a segment that, this is a part of the book that allows you to think about the actual setting of your campaign and all the real world details of things that are going on in the background. But it's so nice to just have it literally put here in the book officially with all of the ideas for it, so that, you know, you, again, it's that whole you're being given permission as an arbitrator to go and do this. And I think, again, that's the thing I keep coming back to with this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's just basic, kind of like you say, it's such a simple system. So creating a setting, maintaining a setting, creating the population, the hired guns, Underhive Nemesis monsters that might be in there, the kind of commerce that runs within that
surprisingly detailed, actually.
Yeah, the environment, and just ways of enriching and fleshing out a campaign, and I think it's really cool. But yeah, we'll let the listeners kind of find that themselves. But then they do have a load of example settings, so that you don't have to just create from scratch. They've got we've got six different preset locations, and they're all places that you'll recognize from the lore. So Sump City, we've got Rust Town, Dustwall, Navis Mortis, all kind of recognizable names that have been mentioned
and talked about. Let's not overshoot that mention there. Page 38 of this book, Sump City gets a good mention in there as well. Although, quickly scanning this information, can't see anything about the radio station. So they might want to do an amendum on that.
Yeah, we'll expect an FAQ by an errata. And then it moves into the resurrection packages. Now, when I looked through this, I couldn't see anything new, but then they have been updated, apparently, when it was said in the preview thing. But then I didn't cross-reference, so I was just kind of going from memory.
Yeah. I think the types of resurrection packages are all the same. I'm going to assume that it's within the fine print details of each one, where they might have tweaked it here and there.
Yeah, but they're really nice to have again, because having a leader die in your first game is a son of a bitch. So it's really nice to see that included. And then what's up next? So we just get some nice pictures of stuff and suggestions of things to do.
Speaking of pictures, there are so many nice bits of artwork in this book.
Oh, yeah, lovely. The Escher one at the beginning is one of my favourites, I think.
Is that Belladonna, isn't it?
I thought it was just a
Power
random
Axe. Yeah, it's Belladonna.
Oh, yeah. Right. And then we go on to the Arbitrator scenarios, including Terror in the Dark, Prison Break, some nice little couple of pages of fluff there, but not too much. That's one thing.
Yeah, and Prison Break is actually a really nice scenario. It was such a shame when that just kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
To the point that I remember in one of our previous episodes that we had specifically mentioned, well, I think we were talking about all the different scenarios that were available and how some had got lost in the cracks, and those two came up in particular, Prison Break and Monster Hunt, because they're such fun ones to play.
Yeah, and both included here, easy to get hold of, no mucking around.
Yeah.
So there's a few different... And then we get the gang raid scenarios, which are really nice. Corrupt Enforcer scenario there, the bar brawl, and a few others in there as well. But we'll kind of pick it apart bit for bit. And then the Uprising campaign. Now, I know that this is a lot of people's favourite campaign because of the difficulty of it, because of the focus on kind of survival and kind of stripping back a little bit the access to stuff that you get in other campaigns.
I have issues with this. Not in the sense of that I think there's something wrong with the campaign. It is, as you've said, it's great. It just messed me over when I played this one.
Yeah, I think... if you get fucked early on, then it's a really difficult one to claw back from. But it's just nice. Like I say, you can get... I mean, I don't know how much this book costs, to be fair, so I'm guessing around the 30 quid mark. But to have that in here,
I'm guessing,
it's a really decent little addition and a good thing to include in this. The only thing with this book is it's the name, calling it Apocrypha, because obviously we get the Apocrypha articles, and these aren't the Apocrypha articles, and it just feels like quite a weird kind of similarity there.
Yeah, that's if we're going to like have a balanced review on this and put in some negatives as well, that's one negative, one thought I have on this book is that you've called it Apocrypha Necromunda. It doesn't have any of those articles in there.
No. It's definitely an unusual choice of name. But saying that, yeah, so you get the full Arbitrator campaign and all of the scenarios that go with... Uprising campaign and all of the scenarios that go along with that, which is really cool. And then we get the inclusion of the Outlaw Brutes. So the beautiful Scrap Code, Corrupted Ambot, the Mutated Ogryn, etc., which, again, it's just really nice to be able to have them available officially. It's not like, oh, are we including White Dwarf articles or are we not, like, expansions? It's like, no, this is just part of the game now.
Yeah, but another, again, it's permission.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, exactly that. And it's like, we aren't breaking it because this is kind of what it's designed for. And the next new bit, which I'm really fucking... very happy about this, and I think it really turns the Ashwaste vehicles into more flavoursome, kind of house-specific thematic vehicles, new additional clan house vehicle rules.
So, yeah, towards the back of the book, page 121 onwards, it lists off additional equipment that can be taken by each of the main houses. Well, I don't think there's anything surprising on here, but it's just adding to the flavour that has been established by the House of books for these gangs already, really.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just the fact that when you're buying a vehicle now, you can buy weapons that suit your house that are specific. So, and there's some, like with Escher, they get access to the chem thrower, so they can put that on a vehicle. So they could have a Ridge Runner, like a standard Ridge Runner, and then just have a chem thrower on the top of it.
Which sounds awesome.
Yeah. It's like you're not... It just opens them up and makes them more thematic to the gang that you're playing. So, like, you can have a plasma cannon on a Vansar vehicle. Or another example would be the Crumper Rivet Cannon on a Goliath vehicle. Or a heavy crossbow.
Not, no one will actually take that.
No
it's nice to see it on the list.
It's nice to see it, exactly. But, I mean, it's like the smaller guns. So, like, with Vansar, you get access to las carbines and things. So you can just imagine having a couple of those, or, like, well, one of those mounted on the side. And it's not that big a jump from what we had, but it's just enough to kind of... So that when you're kitbashing and customising your vehicles, it's kind of like you can justify it all, and it means that people are going to have so many variations of each thing. I think Orlok do very well because they got the seismic cannon and mining laser available on all of their vehicles, and it's like, ouch.
Cawdor get some sticks and stones, so
it's yeah, standard. And Dalak web guns on vehicles, man. It's like
web guns on vehicles. That's possibly the one initial thought that I think people are... Because, as you said, the overall response to this book and the contents within it has been extremely positive, which is always nice to see. But the one question that I have seen from a lot of community sources when they saw the contents page was, Dalak vehicle?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, and unfortunately, it is omitted from this book. We do get the inclusion of the Wraith crew, so that was an Apocrypha that they were made available in, and that gives us their skill access and equipment access and the vehicles that they can buy at creation.
Mm. We even get access to the Dalak Vehicle Gang Tactics table, so if you want to avoid purchasing the cards, then the table's here for you.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we still haven't seen what vehicle Dalak get. And my only kind of suspicion, like my only theory for why we haven't, is that they haven't got a model. And, to create some people... Let's be honest, third parties would just be creating something based off an illustration or even just a suggestion of what this is. And you know, like it or loathe it, that's got to be fucking frustrating for a company like Games Workshop, who put the rules out and somebody else was selling a model that fulfills that niche before they've even had a chance to do so.
As I've said for some time now, though, Chris, I believe that the marketing department for Games Workshop is run by Zinch. So, that you know, it's all as part of the design. You know, anything that you think you're going, why did they do that? Nope, that was all meant to happen exactly like that. And it'll all become clear later on down the road.
Absolutely. No.
But I think the problem that they had was that article that they came out with, where it described a Dalak vehicle as a sort of a giant squid with multiple detaching things. I think they let the writer go wild with that, and then after they published it, they go, right, let's have a look at what Dave's article says. We need to make this vehicle now, and Dave, yeah. Dave, come here and explain what you've... How the hell are we supposed to build this, Dave? I think that's what went down.
Yeah, this thing is essentially a Titan. This isn't going to work. Yeah,
we're not going to be able to put this in plastic and get loads of people to buy this, Dave. This is really me. Dave's there like, I don't fucking care. This is awesome. I played a lot.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. Yeah, and I want it. No, but that's essentially what you get in the book. That's the entire contents of it. There's no dramatis persona. There's no special characters, hangers-on. Very little fluff. There's like a couple of text boxes, but not a great deal.
Yeah, very little fluff.
It's all rules. So
And lovely pictures.
In that respect, it's my kind of book. I'm more like, yeah, give me them rules, because that's more stuff to throw into the game. And I think arbitrators are going to absolutely love it, and especially any new players who don't have access to those older articles or really don't fancy scouring eBay to buy like upmarked...
dead books.
Yeah, where they're only going to be wanting these few pages out of it. It's all in one place. So, yeah. No. More of this, to be honest. To be fair, I think the more stuff you can throw into your game, the more variety you get, the more interested you can keep a bunch of players going through a campaign.
Yeah, there's nothing not to like it, and especially if you've missed out on getting issues of White Dwarf, so that you've got the physical copy of these. And that's the thing, even when you do have the physical copies of White Dwarf with these articles in it, it's like a couple of pages in a large magazine that you just need to get through to news, and then you've got to drag all those books around, and then you've got all of the official rule books that you tend to drag around with you as well. So it's like, you know, it's just extra stuff. So having it in a concise format is just, I think it's worth it,
yeah,
personally.
No, definitely. So yeah, that's the Apocrypha expansion. Basically, I'm sure you'll see loads of kind of more in-depth little breakdown everything, but where's the fun in that? You can kind of just pick the book up yourself and spend your time going through it on
Speaking of in-depth breakdowns, Chris, are you going to be doing anything on your YouTube channel for this?
Not for the book. I am. Thankfully, we were sent the Tauros Venator for the Enforcers, and I have done just a build video for that.
Oh, nice.
And I've got it. I've only got a prime because we did get it sent rather late. Sorry, Games Workshop. I do need a little bit more lead time, but like, you know, I've gone through the sprues, what's on the sprues, I've built it together, and then I've included how I've kept it in sub-assemblies ready to paint, or ready to prime and paint, and I've shown you how that breaks down, and I've also gone through like possible ways you could convert and kitbash it, like just some really easy kind of ideas just for inspiration for people, or certainly how I thought when I started looking at it, and especially with... in relation to the new vehicle weapon access that we get through this, I've got a couple of suggestions of things you could do there. So, yeah, I'll definitely have that.
Because it comes with the seismic cannons, doesn't it?
The seismic cannon and the heavy stubbers, which look very much like autoguns to me, but I'm not going to argue that it's their game.
So you could easily convert that for another vehicle kit if you want to go with the house.
Essentially, you just take the whole turret out because it's a revolving turret. And then because... The Tauros Venator comes with dedicated gunner, so it's like the Orlok one where you can kind of, you get full, you have to have a guy operating that because it's a dedicated gunner. You don't get that option. Say if I was to do a Vansar version I could just stick a plasma cannon on the top. I don't have to worry about having the turret itself. I could rebuild a different kind of, just a fixed gun, or you could even strip it back and just have it as a kind of a, almost like a flatbed for transport. So you've just got a nice little speedy transport unit where you get like 4 or 5 guys in and get them across the board really fast. It's a really nice kit, actually. I'm really kind of impressed with it.
Yeah, I've got to agree with that one. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a plastic Tauros that's to scale now, rather than the old versions, which I believe were slightly smaller.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely kit. And so, yeah, there you go. Hive Scum Steve gives you permission to buy this. So tell that to your missus. Hive Scum Steve approved! But there we go. Not a very quick wrap up there with a mention of the Tauros as well. But that's our thoughts on the latest drop from Games Workshop for Necromunda in the form of the Necromunda Apocrypha book. As I mentioned earlier on, we have got a full episode coming out hopefully for Christmas Eve. So do listen out for that. Anything else you want to say, Chris, before we go?
No, obviously just thanks to Games Workshop for the review copy. And yeah, we better get back to it, mate, because we've got an episode to get out.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, GW, for that. And thank you for listening. And we will see you in the next episode.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Sump City Radio is a registered associate of the Hertzian Guild of Hive Primus and adheres to all communication laws decreed by Lord Helmar.